What is the secret to the give process? The give process, as you know, is a cornerstone of what makes our practice owner clients so happy, which is why I want to share it with you. Because you're listening as an associate dentist. Existing practice owners, if they're listening to this podcast, they're probably people who are struggling, looking to fix things that aren't working well. And that's okay. But for you, I'm excited that you are about to create the future for your practice the right way. I'm excited that you're taking these first steps now in preparation as an associate dentist to prepare the right way for the rest of your career so that we can get this right the first time. When you get it right the first time, your team is on board, your team is passionate, your practice is growing like crazy, and your community is on board with your cause in ways that I cannot wait to have happen for you. So right now, let's explore this. What is the give process secret? And what are the background pieces of information that I believe you should know that led to the creation of this give process that I'm confident will change the rest of your career? You ready? Here we go.
This is the Startup Dentist Podcast, where associate dentists ignite their journey to practice ownership with a startup that matters. Learn from the experts who have opened more private practice startups than anyone in dentistry, led by your host and CEO of Ideal Practices, Jamie Amos.
Welcome back, startup crew. I'm so excited you're here. Listen, the conversations that we're having inside the Startup Crew Facebook group are taking off. I want you to join us. Please go now to startupdentistpodcast.com. Get yourself an invitation. Remember, Associate Dentist, this community is for you. This is the space where we're going to be supporting you, where we're going to be supporting each other, where we're going to be talking about what actually works for startups, not silly theories out there. So I can't wait to have you there. One of the cornerstones of this process is the give. So why is it that other doctors have attempted this process and really not had any results? Why is it that others feel like they're just checking something off the list and it's not even something that matters to them, but they feel like they're supposed to do this? And others even say, I want to be a part of something special, but how do I afford that? I can barely afford my current bills, let alone trying to give away a bunch of money to a charity, right? Okay, those are real issues. In order to resolve this, I should share with you how this came about. I am not a dentist. You may already know that, but I actually got my start. I have a degree in international business. Right out of undergrad years ago, I started a company with my cousin. We grew very quickly. My cousin Rob and I, we started a company that has nothing to do with dentistry. We actually started a business that finds jobs for engineers and scientific people. It grew to over $1 million in the first year, and we had 30-some employees in that first year. We're very fortunate to have things go so well. And I remember one night, it was like a moment. It was like a life moment this night. We went to go look for real estate to expand the business. We needed a bigger facility to get to the next level. And we're touring the facility with a realtor. Rob and the realtor were upstairs. I was downstairs about to walk out the door. And like it was last night, I still can replay every minute like it just happened. My phone rang and it was my mom, maybe like any good 20 something. I looked at the phone, the caller ID, saw that it was my mom. And what did I do? I sent it to voicemail, right? That's what 20 somethings do. I'm confident, I've been there. So I put it in my pocket, but it rang again instantly. And in my family, that always means this is an SOS, pick up. So I did, picked up. I said, hey mom, we're about to finish the real estate tour. What's going on? She stopped me and she said, Jame, there's been an accident. Your brother, Michael, and his fiance, Trish, have been in a bad accident. They've been broadsided by a drunk driver. You should get to the hospital as fast as you can. So Rob drove me as fast as possible to the hospital on the other side of town. And I found out that night that my brother, who was not even 20 years old, and his fiance, who had been serving at a church, doing the thing that they were most passionate about, caring for teens there, as they were pulling out of the parking lot, they were killed instantly by a drunk driver. Just awful. For my family, pain, the word pain doesn't even start to describe everything that I experienced over these next couple months. My brother and that church were kind of the highlight of quite a bit. They ended up on lots of broadcasts and news things. There were thousands of people at his funeral. And it was just gut-wrenching for our entire community. And I moved back home. I ended up processing through lots of things, like some of us do, in those really hard moments. Maybe you've had a moment like that, where you're forced to refocus and forced to re-examine what actually matters. For me, I knew that my business was good. I knew that I valued my family. And as part of this process, maybe it was healing, maybe it was, I'm not sure what it was, but I ended up selling my business. I ended up selling all the business back to my cousin just a few months after my brother passed. So I'm telling you this because this leads up to where this give process comes from. Part of the reason I sold my business, through the kind of self-examination of what is this all for? I started to realize that I had the respect from the town. I was being pursued by people, I was being invited to fancy dinners, I was asked advice by successful business people. That was all pretty cool. So I had a business and I had profits, but I could tell, especially when I sold the business, like it was like empty. It's almost like I sold off part of myself and there was nothing left. I can almost feel it, like as distasteful saying it now as it felt to me then, like, oh, okay, so is that it? Like, cool, I sold my business. I've got this pile of money. I knew then for sure, I decided, like, especially with the reflection of what happened with Michael, I knew that I wanted to do something that mattered and I wanted to do something of purpose. I wanted to make sure that if I was ever going to start another business, I would find a way to have it serve a great cause. But I knew I was great in business. So I knew I could grow a company, but I didn't want to just kind of do a nonprofit of my own. I knew that wasn't right either, but I didn't know the solution. So I actually started buying some real estate. I hadn't found the solution, but I started buying commercial and residential properties up and down the East Coast. I started buying them toward going out west. And interestingly, in the process of real estate purchases and building a little real estate portfolio, I started to notice some patterns. And I started to notice how demographics and real estate strategies could overlap to help small businesses, particularly startups. I ended up helping quite a bit of startups find location, not in dentistry, just startups in general. I started to notice these overlaps of patterns of things that continued to work in market after market. And then I got a call from a buddy who introduced me to a young dentist. That young dentist, my undergrad roommate, introduced me to a friend of a friend who through dental practice management software introduced me to Dr. Dan. And Dr. Dan is an associate dentist. Dr. Dan took me aside and almost like whispered in my ear like, hey, James, I'm making really good money, but you got to get me out of here. I was like, what? That sounds like a paradox. The way I know the world, most people, when they have good money, like they're happy where they are. And he made it really clear to me that he knew he could probably continue to make a good living as an associate, but he wanted to have control and do his own. So he literally said to me, do you think what you do with real estate and with other businesses and your own successful business, could that work for a dental office? I looked Dan in the eye and I said real confidently, Dan, I have no freaking clue. I have no idea if what I do for other businesses and real estate could work for a startup dental office, but shoot, let's try. I don't know. Let's give it a shot. So we did. Dan trusted me for some guidance and it was hard, hard, hard work. The learning curve, even with all my experience negotiating real estate and my demographics research and the strategies, it was hard, but it was hard fought. And the win was there within the first 18 months. Dan had surpassed that $1 million mark. I think he did 1.2 or 1.4 million. That was years ago. So I thought that was brutal. That was really difficult. And that is actually what led to the inception of Ideal Practices as a consulting company. Interestingly, it was around then that I thought, you know, but I'm still not going to pursue this as a service, as a business, unless I can find a way to have it matter. I don't want to be left in that same place where I had a business and I had more money and then nothing left. And this is why, maybe you've heard before, with every startup dental practice that Ideal Practices opens in the United States, we fund 10 startup businesses in third world countries around the world. We do this all over the world, which is why I'm so incredibly passionate about what we do with Ideal Practices. I know I'm incredibly grateful to be able to impact doctors' futures through private practice ownership, through a startup that they're proud of. That's awesome. That's amazing. In and of itself, it's so good. But on top of that, I also know that every time we successfully open a practice, we provide the money to create these nonprofit loans for people who have literally no options. I'm talking about people in like dirt road towns with tin roof shacks as homes. I've been there. I remember walking down one of those paths, seeing how this, it's called micro lending, seeing how this micro lending operation works. And I remember this sad, incredibly poor, pretty sick town. I remember walking down one of these dirt paths with a small group to see this in motion, to see it in real life. And in a little shanty that felt so poor and so sad, I remember seeing one woman toward the back corner of this little village, and she stood so bold with this huge, proud smile. I'll never forget seeing her. That first glance at her made me realize, oh my gosh, that's gotta be the woman who got this loan. And I found out that, you know, she's standing over this big silver pot. As I'm seeing her, walking up to her, she's standing over a giant silver pot with a huge spoon, like it's almost out of the movies, and a bunch of oil that's boiling in this pot. And she and her kids are boiling plantains. You know, they cut up plantains, and they didn't boil them. I guess they fried them in the oil. But they fried them in the oil, and then the kids would bag them in little plastic bags. And they would take the bags of fried plantains, almost like little chips, and they'd take them to the market and sell them for a profit, which is so cool. They did this as a startup business through one of these nonprofit loans. And they had no access to any other kind of loan. They had no access to any kind of startup business training except for this method, this microfinance method. Now, not only is she kind of like the beacon of hope at the back of the corner of this shanty town, but she's also now employing some of her neighbors. And she's like this happy, bold, proud, and I'd even say dignified, accomplished individual because of a startup. And this is why I love startups. This is why I know, why I knew then, and I know now, if I'm going to continue to do this, I'm going to do it in a way that matters, that changes people's lives, and it affects things even beyond the 9 to 5. The business will be good, the business will be profitable, and we will have an incredible purpose serving people overseas, which is why, my friends, I'm telling you, when I say practice and profits and purpose, the three P's, right? Practice, profits, purpose. I'm preaching to the choir here. I'm telling you exactly what I do. I'm telling you what I believe you should do because I've been there. I've had the practice or a business. I've opened plenty of businesses. I've had profitable businesses. I've had profits after even selling a business. And I can tell you, it is best when, it is most rewarding when, it is awesome when. I am encouraged to, for you, if you want to enjoy the rest of your career, then do it in a way that includes all three. Practice, profits, purpose. This is the inception of the give process. This is where the whole method comes from. And this is what I want for you. And this is, hopefully you can tell for me, this is a matter of passion. This is a matter of a topic that means a lot to me at a very deep level. Now, does your give, does your practice need to be involved in something emotional? No. Does it need to be involved in something that is international? No. Does it need to be involved in something that matters to you? Heck yeah. Because God forbid, if this turns into something that's just a checkbox item, and listen, you're not alone in this. If you're like, oh, that sounds cool, but I'm not really sure. Like, should I just choose an organization where it's going to be like affecting the most people, or that's like most a charity that's like attractive to a lot of people? Those answers are like big fat no to each of those. But just so you know, if you're having like questions like that, they're normal, very normal. Is the give process necessary for a startup practice to thrive? No, it's not necessary. But can a startup practice grow faster, especially a private practice? Can a privately owned practice thrive even faster? Can you enjoy your practice even more? Can your team be on board with the purpose instead of just a paycheck? Can your community get on board with an incredible cause that you become the community leader for? Can you do all this and not even spend an hour of time doing it? Yeah, absolutely. Can you do this in a way that allows the growth of your practice to affect the growth of this cause? Heck yeah. Can you do this in a way that will change the rest of your family's life? My gosh, yes, you can. And that's why I'm so excited about the GIVE process. I'm hopeful that the background and the inception of the GIVE process gives you a peek into why this matters, what we're going to do about it, and where I want to take you on this journey toward a startup that matters. So here's to you. Here's to my compliments to you for taking these first big steps forward. I cannot wait to see what successes you create on this journey. And I am so excited to see the success that you create toward your steps in private practice ownership. See you on the next episode. Take care. Every associate dentist needs to ask one important question before opening their practice. The question is, where? Where should you open your practice? The topic of location is all important. From real estate selection to negotiation, demographics, and strategies for signage and space, and the amount of negotiating that you need to do for your practice is a crucial decision. That's why I wrote a book called Choosing the Right Practice Location. It covers all the strategies of demographics, taxation, PPOs, reimbursement rates, strategies that will affect the rest of your career. Right now, we have a 1,000 book giveaway. We decided to benefit the entire industry by giving away 1,000 copies of my bestseller. It still sells every month on Amazon, but right now I'd like to be able to have you get one of the free copies. You can go to this website and find out if there are still free copies to get yours. It's at www.idealpractices.com/free. That's www.idealpractices.com/free.